This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
For this month's JodBite, I'm talking to Chris Jordan, who works out here at Jodrell Bank Observatory and is sort of, well, I think of as a kind of bridge between the telescope and the people that use the data from it. So can you tell us a bit about how you do that?
Oh, well, I came here quite a long time ago, so I'm one of the older members still out here. And I came from a background of making computers work on things and making computers steer steer large lumps of metal. I've worked on wind turbine controls and channel tunnel digging machines. So the Lovell telescope is another big bit of metal that a computer has to move around in the right direction. So the first things I did when I came here were to work on the control systems to point telescopes in the right place. But after that, I mostly work on getting machinery, getting interfaces together to take the data from the telescope and parcel it up nicely for the astronomers to use. It's a good job. I don't have to write technical papers. but if I'm lucky, all these kind people will put my name on the paper anyway. So I get the glory, but don't have to do the really nasty bits of work, which is writing essays.
So that's what you consider to be the nasty bits. It seems as though other people, sometimes desperate for you to help them get the data into a form that they can actually use, as though for the astronomers that's sort of a nasty bit, I guess.
Yes, well, hopefully that's the easy bit. I get a bit fed up writing scripts after a while. For those who don't do any computer programming, you can write big programs that crunch the numbers, but you can write little things called scripts, which will help you go through large amounts of data by calling up your big programs in the right order. And as I suspect most astronomers know, they can be the really nasty things to work on. Mostly, though, I work with a new piece of hardware that somebody has decided they want some data from the telescope better than we ever did it before. We've gone from very old computers that people have hand-wired and had maybe 8 kilobytes of memory to big computers and then back down to small ones again.
8 kilobytes is truly tiny compared to what you get now, isn't it?
Well, they used to sort of say, oh, you've got more in your mobile phone, but nowadays a mobile phone doesn't even compare with our bigger computers sometimes, so the older big ones. We had a lot of analog equipment, which meant that some digital engineer, some electronic engineer would have designed various chips to do a lot of the work for us, and then we just read the data out every few minutes. You didn't get an enormous amount of data, so the computer was left to work for itself, and the hardware did most of the hard work. Nowadays, though, computers are much, much better than they were. They're very fast, and we put more and more of the work onto the computer in dealing with the data. Mark has said that I should tell you about some of our oldest computers, and I think if anyone can take a picture of one to put up on the podcast, it would be nice. Something like the Microcircy in the Linkup, which is our last working Microcircy computer. It's hand-wired, it's still just about running, and it is due for replacement eventually.
What does it do at the moment?
At the moment, it deals with things called the L-band link phases, which are how we send timing signals up and down to our outstation telescopes. And it also deals with a few last-ditch controls for setting local oscillators for things.
So it's part of Merlin then, synchronising the computers?
Yes, it's mostly part of Merlin.
Synchronising the telescopes, I should say.
Yes, the timing on the data from the telescopes.
Right.
We have to make sure that data for something like Merlin and pulsars, which I work on as well, is all timed to the best possible level we can do.
Are there any aged computers that no one dares to replace?
Well, that's one of them. No, nobody dares touch that one. Every so often we go and press 3 buttons on it to restart it. But that one used to have to load paper tape in to reboot.
Wow. And what sort of hardware, coming back to the present day, what sort of hardware are you working with at the moment?
Well, nowadays we've moved through putting systems in that were analog systems, which did a lot of the processing. The computer does a lot more of it now. So the first one of those we did was called Cobra, which stood for something, coherent, something back-end for radio astronomy.
Baseband.
Yes.
Or back-end. It stood for something. Mainly it was just a name like a snake, which sounded cool.
Now, this was about 5 cabinets, chock full of computers, so half a room full of computers. We fed a raw data signal in, and it dedispersed it, which means you had to tell it what the pulsar was like, and it unraveled all the things that happened to the pulse between leaving a pulsar and getting to Jodrell Bank. So we had to know a lot about a pulsar. We fed in all the data that we had, and the computer would decode the signal. It's very similar to the sort of work that the SETI will be doing on their SETI at home, if any of you have ever run that. Mm-hmm. That took up a lot of space. It had something like 120 processors all sitting in racks churning out heat and data. We have since replaced that with pretty well a single computer.
Hmm.
And then we've gone back up again because we've added another 20 or 30 computers, so it does the same work, but it does it on 20 or 30 times the amount of data.
I suppose that's the thing, you can never resist. Once something's got better or more compact, you can never resist just sticking in another bunch of them and, yes, and doing even more with that.
The last couple of things I've been developed have been sort of baby offshoots of the current hardware for doing pulsars. One of them, quite a long time ago, we put on our 7-meter telescope, which students and other people can use, which just does spectral line work. And at the time, we bought the fastest single computer we could. We put a card in it to read the data straight off the telescope, and we did things called Fourier transforms on it as fast as we could to get spectra. Now, that computer has broke down a few years ago, and I replaced it with an old desktop that somebody had no use for because it was too slow, and it still runs faster than the thing we had on it 5 years ago. So the computers are changing so fast that I'm now using somebody's cast-off that was too slow.
Yeah.
And it does better than the best we could buy.
Wow. Now, I always think that's interesting. Sometimes people ask me how the Lovell telescope has lasted so long, and I always think that the way you can improve the computer processing behind it is a big key to why it still continues to be useful and will go on continuing to improve even though the physical structure is the same.
Well, we've improved the surface, which helped quite a bit, and that was actual mechanical engineering and metal bashing. We point it better than we did, so we track a source better. We've got better motor controls on it now. But what we now work on is putting more computers on it, and we probably in the last few years have gone from something like a 32 megahertz band up to 250 or more. We could go further with the equipment we've got, but we need to find somewhere where there isn't too much interference, and that's one of the problems we have with yeah. telescopes now. We're only supposed to be observing in about a 16 megahertz band, which is dedicated to astronomy in the band we most use for pulsars, called L-band. But in fact, we can sneak little bits of signal in between all the sources of interference that we have in this site. So there's the odd megabyte here and there that we can get out. And pulsars are quite nice for doing that with, because when we unravel the signal, we can get rid of quite a lot of this interference. Not everything, but we can get quite a lot of data out where people wouldn't normally be able to do astronomy. We've probably had a factor of 10 on the bandwidth that we can now deal with. So even though we haven't got a new telescope, we've improved the data we get off it by an awful lot. Mm. Merlin is doing the same thing, and we've been working on putting a new correlator on there and bringing the signal back over fibres. And that means we can bring back a really much larger bandwidth than we had before. We've gone up from that one from about 16 to about 500 megahertz of band. So instead of building ourselves several new telescopes, which would be nice, and we still have hope for that, we've improved everything by a factor of about 10, I think, maybe more in some places, just by putting new hardware on the end of it.
Excellent. And then, just as the very last thing, I know when you're not doing any computer work, you tend to do things like weaving baskets and making things out of alpaca wool, is that right?
Yes, yes. You will find there's quite a lot of mathematically based people like weaving.
Really?
I know two or three of the other people I know who weave are science based.
Is that because it's mathematical, or is it because it just helps you to get as far away from computers as possible?
Both, but it is a craft that depends on patterns and maths to a certain extent.
Right.
It's not very arty.
Right. I know there's some alpacas living around one of the Merlin telescopes, aren't there? Do you ever get your hands on their wool?
I did. I went out to one of their open days. They've actually moved on now. They're somewhere a bit further away. But they ran a herd of alpacas round one of our little telescopes. And when they had an open day there, and Tom Muxlow, one of our astronomers, went up to the telescope and told the visitors about the astronomy. And I had a rather strange day sitting spinning alpaca and trying to explain the cosmic microwave background to someone at the same time. Rather badly, I think.
Fantastic. Okay, well, on that note, I'll say thank you very much for the interview.
Thank you.